Welcome to the 1955 Kahlua Study Series, and also welcome to those of you that will be joining us in what appears to be the future, but which we recognize now is happening at this moment. And so, though we may not know all your names, you are certainly all welcome. Just have a seat there on the side and pull up a chair and join us for Chapter 18, The Christ on Earth. Now, this chapter is really self-explanatory. He opens it up by taking us through some scriptures in the book of Isaiah. And some of them we're familiar with, some of them we may not be. So go ahead and read those, and then we'll get started in his comments. First thing that drew my attention was, the truth is that God has anointed only the Christ. And that's something that's been coming to me a lot lately. I have recognized something that I'm going to share with you tonight. But first, let's read the whole thing. The truth is that God has anointed only the Christ, not a man or a person, but His own Son, the beloved Christ. This is a spiritual entity, a spiritual impulse, a spirit that is in men. This it is that is blessed, that is anointed, that is upheld by the Father. And you remember way back when we read the chapter that talked about the Word was made invisible flesh and dwells in our midst? Well, this invisible flesh is the presence that you feel when you feel the presence. And this invisible flesh, this presence, is the Christ. And this Christ is the reality of all being. It's never a person that's anointed. You will never be anointed or told to go out and preach the gospel. That's a misunderstanding. This invisible presence, this invisible flesh in your midst, this is the Son of God. This is what's anointed. This is what carries the message, the gospel, the good news. And this is Christ in your midst. And if you've been practicing 12 times a day, surely by now, most of us have made that contact. Now, what does that mean, making the contact? Well, we've covered that some. It means you reach a place within your being where thinking slows down. It won't necessarily stop, but it'll slow down. And even while it's going on, you're not engaged with it. You're not up there in it. So you reach a point where thinking slows down. You're not up there engaged with it. You're just listening. You're receptive. You're still. You might even have said, "Speak, thy servant heareth," or "Thy will be done," or "Thy grace is my sufficiency." And you stand still for a moment. In one of these times, you actually really do reach that standing still. and in the quiet of that moment, in the stillness of that moment, something moves. And that something is the Christ, and it can be felt in several different ways. It could be a still small voice that whispers something. You hear it, an actual voice. It could be an impartation. Suddenly there's an understanding that comes to you, and the feeling with it is a quickening. I don't know how to describe that. Let's see, later on in this chapter he talks about the stone cut out of the mountain without hands. I only need to read that. I only need to hear that line, that sentence. And there's this quickening within. I can feel it. Almost a humming. It tells me that that's a very important statement uttered by Christ itself. Some things you read and they're not. You might read some of Paul's statements and they seem like they're just political statements. But other things, like Romans 8, where he talks about, if so be that the Spirit of God dwells in you, then are you the Son of God. That kind of thing has that quickening with it. And I have learned to trust that. So, that's how I know the difference. When I'm in meditation and I read that still, I reach that stillness, and I receive an impartation, there's that quickening with it. When it's just a thought, it's not there. It's just a thought. So that's one form that it may reveal itself to you. It might be just a feeling of a presence that moves through you or around you or into you. It most definitely comes a lot of the time as a sense of peace. Now, I don't mean just a, well, I'm relaxed in this chair. It's not that. It flows into your being from another dimension, and it's peace. It's my peace. And you feel it. And you know everything's okay. It's just an inner knowing that goes with that peace. So there's a lot of ways that this invisible flesh, this Christ, can reveal itself to you in meditation. But that invisible flesh, that spirit, in the old days they didn't know what to call it, so they called it a spirit because it felt like that. That spirit, that presence, that Christ, that invisible flesh in your midst, that is what is anointed. And so when he says it is that which is blessed and anointed and upheld by the Father, I realized in meditation a few weeks ago that God sustains and maintains its Son for eternity. In other words, God maintains and sustains that invisible flesh forever. That is what is maintained and sustained, not anything out here, not anything appearing out here. Now, wherever the Spirit of God appears in human consciousness, you may know that all of the blessings described in Isaiah and all of the prophecies regarding the rich fruitage of the Christ will be made evident. Furthermore, there comes a specific period in the life of an individual when the seed of Christ is planted, nurtured, realized, until on a Christmas day the child is born. And this Kailua study series is for the express purpose that you may experience that Christmas day if you haven't already. In the case of each one, Christmas Day may be a different date. Alright. So, if you are practicing what you have learned so far, sometime by the end of this study, or very, very soon thereafter, you will have your Christmas Day, in which that invisible flesh reveals itself to you. not as something you read in a book or heard in a talk, but an actual living, quickening experience within your consciousness. Because your consciousness is the birthplace and residence of Christ. Now, this chapter has to do with allowing that Christ to flow through you into, well, into the earth. Now, he says, when you experience that birth of the Christ, then you lose all sense of what you would call personal demonstration. And we talked about that, remember? From now on, there's no more demonstration out here to make. The only demonstration is that invisible flesh, that Christ within. It is a point of transition in your consciousness from where there exists a need or a desire or an unfulfilled life, in other words, a human, to that place where there is no life of one's own to be fulfilled. The activity of the Christ in individual consciousness is never for one's own benefit. It is always there as a blessing. Alright, yes, I have come that they might have life, and life more abundantly. So, where we're going in this chapter is we are seeing that Christ must be born, must be an individual experience in your consciousness. And when it happens, it begins immediately to dissolve everything unlike itself. So of course you won't have it there just for your benefit. This I that speaks and says, my peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, is not a man talking to you or me. This is the still small voice, which is within the realm and reach of every individual who attains the receptive ear. Now you see, you don't have to be worthy, you don't have to be good enough, you don't have to be pleasing to God, none of that stuff, let's call it stuff. You do, however, have to have a receptive ear. It is, I wrote, the invisible flesh in our midst, I in the midst of thee. That's the one that's speaking. All right? This whole class is designed so that you may have contact with that. Spiritual discernment reveals the Word made flesh, invisible flesh in our midst, which is the Son of God appearing as form. Now, we're going to get into this in a little bit, but I guess we could put it in right here because it sure is pressing my consciousness. And that is, for the most part, yes, okay, I'm going to say it. Here we go. For the most part, what you are as a human being is a human mind made up mostly of the world mind, which appears as form. The world mind forms itself. That's why you can see anything you want in this world destroyed. You can take the whole planet and blow it to smithereens. And antimatter, they have discovered in space, can swallow. Well, I don't know if it can swallow a whole galaxy, but I imagine it can. So there's pretty much nothing in this world that cannot be destroyed. And yet we're told repeatedly that which God made is eternal. Well, how do you resolve the two? Well, I've resolved it like this. In the second chapter of Genesis, we are told, yes, yes, we are told, thank you, Father. Spirit is really right here. All right. In the first chapter of Genesis, we are told that, or we are shown that the mind created a false sense of existence. and a false person, and a false universe. And we have been told that no illusion is ever externalized. So all of this, this entire galaxy, let's say, that you see as material form, people, places, and things, is all taking place. It's all mental images formed in the mind. So we have a false creation. Mind formed. World mind formed. World mind appearing as forms. Alright? However, it was revealed to me, or came to me a week or two ago, in my meditation, very plainly, the first chapter of Genesis was first, meaning that's the one God created. And what is that? That's a universe that was formed by consciousness. You see that? The universe, the real creation of God, was consciousness formed, pure consciousness formed in the image and likeness of God. That's the first chapter of Genesis. That's the real creation. Now, we who have lived our lives, most of our lives as human beings, seeing this material creation, trying to get ahead or raise our family or find a career or whatever it is we've tried to do, even attain world peace, we've been working in a false creation. We've been working in the mind forms, the mind appearing as forms. Now we approach this spiritual path called the Infinite Way, and we are told to start at the beginning. The only place you can find the kingdom, the real creation of God, is to go within, to become still, to become receptive, listening, having a listening attitude, until we actually make the contact. We make the actual contact within, of or with Christ, with consciousness. Consciousness and Christ are one, and I and the Father are one. When we make that contact with consciousness, then consciousness, which formed itself as a perfect creation, we begin to become aware of consciousness formed. As you lay down, set aside these mind formations, you awaken to consciousness formed. God is the substance of all form, is one of the books. But to see it, to actually feel it, begins when you go within and see and feel and sense that which God formed, the invisible flesh. And then it sort of takes you by the hand and starts to reveal that perfect creation, which is already completed, by the way. God's not going to suddenly form beautiful things for you. The creation's already done. The first chapter of Genesis came first. That creation is already finished. You're standing in it. So, these little meditations where we go within to just make contact with the Christ within is where we start. And slowly we begin to learn that, well, in meditation it came to me recently. I don't know if I told you last week or not, so I'll tell you this week. I think I did, but let's look at it again. I heard within, very clearly, I did not create an earth. That means all of it, ladies and gentlemen. I created a temple not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. So we are standing in the temple of the living God. And then it said, I did not create a man. I manifested as invisible flesh, which fills the temple I made. So you see, contacting this Christ, this anointed one, this invisible flesh, which is the Word formed, this is what we're doing. And so it says, a bruised reed shall he not break. In other words, there is no physical strength in the Christ. There is no physical power in the Christ. Not even a bruised reed, not even the burning torch can be quenched, because the nature of the Christ is a spiritual activity and wholly without physical accompaniment. And yet, is sufficient to destroy the whole four temporal kingdoms. And that's an important point, because I have realized in my meditations, I used to think that it was necessary to have a lot of mental activity rehearsing these truths. But I tell you, since starting this Kailua study series quite some time ago now, I have become consciously aware that the only thing that's required is making the contact. When you make the contact, you rest, you relax in it, and it does everything. That's why a human being cannot heal. A human being is a nothing. It's this invisible flesh. It is what reveals the finished kingdom, and we call it a healing. But it does it without our help. That's why the value of these meditations for 12 times a day cannot be... Well, you just can't say how important they are. Because the more this invisible spirit, this invisible flesh, this Word made flesh, begins to move in you and through you, well, the more it's just like that dream I had when it was whispered in my ear, you do not have to work that hard, and Christ lifted me up. It's the truth. We are moving out of the letter and into the actual experience of the Spirit. All of us. So, this invisible flesh, this presence, which is so strong with me tonight, is sufficient to destroy the whole four temporal kingdoms, and that without lifting a finger. And so when it says here, remember Daniel revealed a stone cut out of the mountain without hands? It will destroy the four temporal kingdoms. I remember he said he meditated on that for months and months. And in the book, The Art of Spiritual Healing, around page 86 or something, he talks about how that was the whole secret for him. He did not know how to break the hypnotism for a person. But once he learned the meaning behind the stone is cut out of the mountain without hands, he learned that that, not him, that would break the hypnotism. And I have had some experience here in the last few months while working with these principles of having someone call and say, will you give me help? And saying, sure, right now, I'll do it. And hanging up the phone and coming here to my chair and sitting down and realizing, I have hidden manna, grace, and that's it. And feeling that movement of that invisible flesh, the anointed one, and having the person call back and say, it's all better. And no one knows better than I do, as Joel used to say, that I had nothing to do with that. I didn't even think any truth. I just made the contact. All right. Now, the four temporal kingdoms, I was asking someone about that today, and I'm not sure what they are, so I just sort of went within, and the only thing that came to me is that this invisible flesh, this Christ, will dissolve everything unlike itself, which means a physical creation, a mental realm, an ethereal realm where you might find a disembodied soul, and the belief in time. That might be four kingdoms. This invisible Christ will dissolve all of that and reveal itself in its place. Alright, so you might take a stone cut out of the mountain without hands into your meditation several times and see what's revealed to you. I know what was revealed to me, but you have to have your own experience. Now, the work of prayer, he says, that is an avenue or an activity of our consciousness which brings the presence and power of God into human affairs. The result of the activity of the Christ within us is a specific healing to this one and that one. And that's the mystery, isn't it? That's a scripture, isn't it? The mystery of God. How's that go? God in the flesh? That's the mystery of this whole thing. But I can explain it to you, but it's kind of dry and boring. It's nothing like the experience, which is quite wonderful. It means that you sit down, you make the contact, and in a way ye know not of, this invisible flesh flows forth and reveals itself to the person that asked for help 3,000 miles away. Now we know that's due to omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience, but we really don't know what that means. That's all an invisible activity that you don't know and I don't know. But this invisible flesh, this Christ, does know. And that's what he's saying. It becomes necessary for us who have felt that touch of the Christ. We have tourists out here, and they really love to ride their motorcycles through the mountains. And they don't bother me a bit. It's just I'm explaining to you what that noise is. Okay. It becomes necessary for us who have felt the touch of the Christ to make room every single day for its activity to permeate human consciousness. You see, eventually you will come to that place where many of us are now, where calls will come to you from individuals for specific help. But to be prepared for those calls, it is necessary that you learn daily to entertain the Prince of Peace, or the Christ, or the invisible flesh in your midst, the activity of the Christ in your consciousness, and entertain it for no other purpose than the communion itself. Which is what that letter was I wrote on mystical principles. Set aside a time every day in which you release that Christ out into the world, for nothing and for no reason. That's your preparation. Why? Because then when someone calls, he won't be in a hurry to say, oh my goodness, like we learned last week or the week before, oh my goodness, I have to sit down and treat. No. No. If you have these periods throughout the day in which you just release it, you just commune with it, then when a person calls for help, you'll know that's all you're required to do. Have another one of those periods. And simply sit and make contact. And then the person will say, wow, that was fabulous, and you'll be scratching your head. Wow, I wonder how that happened. All I did was make the contact. So he says, go through at least one period of meditation each day, in which you don't take a problem of your own, or anything that concerns you, anything personal, private, or individual. You just simply commune with the activity of Christ, and then see what will follow. Yes, again, he repeats, I turn to this Christ, this anointed of God, this within me which has received the Spirit of God upon it, the healing consciousness upon it, and that's the invisible flesh. That's what's received the Spirit of God, That's what's received all that the Father has. But that will form itself as you. You see, all this time the human mind has made forms which she thought were you, and they're not. Now, in this process, as you continually come to this well, this deep well of consciousness, consciousness will form itself as you. That invisible flesh will form you. That's why we're told, I shall make all things new. So, he says, I turn to that in order to let it be released into the world. And then down here in the next paragraph, he has his vision again. Imagine what it would be with all these Infinite Way students doing this. So, its abiding place is the holy city, which you are. That's your consciousness. This Christ, the Son of God, is so gentle, so gentle. This gentle activity of the Christ, which is the still small voice, is sufficient to the tearing down of the four temporal kingdoms. But one thing is required. Christ must have its Jesus. Yes, we are told in absolute teachings that God is all, everything, and everywhere. And that's a truth. But it's not the truth. Well, what do I mean by that? I mean, in the absolute, that's the truth, but it won't do you any good, or me any good. Now, I had an experience which I've explained to all of you when I went to that Beyond Time seminar of Herb Fitch back in 1979, in which I was lifted right out of this world and found myself standing in the absolute, in which I felt God as my infinite individual being. I felt myself inside of everyone and everything. And that self was God, not a person. And I felt everyone and everything, including the entire Pacific Ocean, inside of my being, which was God, not me. And I walked in that consciousness for 3 days. Now, if that was enough, just simply to know that God's inside everyone and everything, then I would have translated right then, walked right into the invisible off of this planet, wouldn't I? But I didn't. And 3 days later, I returned to normal human consciousness, and then wasted a lot of years, because it was important for me to find the right job, and the right house, and the right woman, the right state, the right career. And I found all of them. I attained all of them. However, there were many periods when I faced unemployment. When I faced bankruptcy one time, I didn't actually have to file, but I sure faced it. When I faced divorce a couple of times. When I faced ill health. Well, where was this God that's inside of everyone and everything? It sure wasn't working in my life. And so that's where we get down to the crux of the matter. Yes, absolute truth is that God is inside of everyone and everything. However, comma, you must have your own individual experience of that. So, when he says one thing is required, Christ must have its Jesus, it means that while that's the truth, well, there's no God on this earth anywhere. And there never will be, unless one turns within, makes that contact, and releases it. Now, you must understand something. We live in that mental creation, the second chapter of Genesis. Our entire lives are spent in that false creation. Of course there's no God in that false creation, and never will be. But what happens when you make the contact and you release it? It flows into you and dissolves everything unlike itself. And where does that dissolving take place? In the mind. That is why if you could walk around, or let's rephrase that, when you walk around in a constant state of receptivity, that Christ, that invisible flesh, will reveal the finished kingdom because it will dissolve everything unlike itself in your mind. It will dissolve the glass darkly. You will see you are already in the kingdom. You will see you are that Son. You will see that all that the Father has is yours. But this must be a conscious experience, and we come to it in steps or stages or degrees. And so, while I was given a glimpse and I peeked through the veil fell back down, and I had to take the steps that we're outlining now so that it may be lifted on a permanent basis, not just a glimpse, but a permanent state of consciousness. Alright. And so Christ, this invisible flesh, must have its Jesus, its Sharon or Al or Kim. It must have its Britta or Bill or Barbara, its Monty or Laura or Ellie or Nancy. It's got to have us. Without us, it doesn't enter. You see that? Yes. God is everywhere, but it makes no difference. No one will see it, know it, or feel it unless you individually make that contact and release it. Let it through. So it's our function every day to go within for a period of visitation with the Christ, permitting entrance of the Christ into human affairs. Prayer is an opening of ourselves to the visitation of the Prince of Peace, a communion with the Prince of Peace. This makes of our consciousness the holy city where the Christ dwells, and through which the Christ finds entrance into human consciousness. So you see that? We have a work to do. And then he talks about there's a period in this experience which is known as going down into Egypt. And we must do this after we make our first contact. Until we reach that place where we can make that contact almost at will. Then, of course, nobody can take it from us. So he says, I caution our students not to be too hasty in their speech and actions, not too revealing, but rather to let the activity of the Christ be so firmly established in them that the world beholds the Christ itself in them. Now, it's only while we are presenting the Christ that we are in danger of losing it ourselves. When the Christ has sufficiently taken over, it presents itself. And then, of course, you know, there's no danger. Now, my own family, while I had dinner with them, I'm talking about my brother and sister, my mom. I have dinner with them. I discuss things, even religious topics, if they bring them up. And yet, not one of them, none of them, zero. And many of my friends do not know of this invisible flesh, this Christ that walks with me on a daily basis. I have never opened my mouth to them. Oh, that's not true. In the very early days, like everybody else, I was excited and shot my mouth off. But I'm talking about after it's been established. I wonder to myself sometimes, if someone that has known me and has passed on and suddenly their eyes were open, I wonder sometimes, do they think, wow, you know, I never even knew it. He had it the whole time. But I don't bring it up. I do not talk about it, except to those of my own household. And there are many people that know me and know nothing about this. Nothing. and yet it's a constant companion. I can't imagine a day without it, without the experience of it, or I, an invisible flesh, at some time during the day. So, our consciousness is the only temple that cannot be destroyed. Consciousness is the only temple that never will be destroyed. It is invisible. The Christ will never be destroyed because it is invisible. The presence and power of the Christ will never be stilled because it is invisible. And I wrote, find that temple within you, and you will have found your eternal life, because it was revealed to me recently in meditation, as I just said, I made a temple, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens, and it is filled with my word manifest as invisible flesh, the Son, that which you are. So you're invisible. This other thing is a mind form. Find out what that invisible form is, because that's who you are. All right. It is not necessary to direct it, to enlighten it, but to sit back without power, without effort, just to let it occupy consciousness, your consciousness and mine. We sit here as a beholder, and it is abroad in the world, carrying its own presence and power of peace and of healing, of restoration. And that's the place we're moving to. We're moving out of the letter where we feel we have to do anything. We're moving into this place of spirit, where we simply get still. We feel the presence upon us, the Christ upon us, the invisible flesh in our midst, and we relax back into it, as I did in my dream. And up, up, up it lifts us into the conscious awareness of the divine. And in some mysterious way, that invisible goes forth and dissolves everything unlike itself. And those reaching out to us don't touch us anymore, our great wisdom. No, they touch this invisible presence, and they receive healing, regeneration, restoration, that which they really need. So you are just to witness this gentle presence within you, receiving its grace from the Godhead as it encircles the globe, as the light of its being shines in the darkness, dispelling the illusions of sense, dispelling the personal sense of I, setting you free from a belief in mortality, setting at liberty the captives. And you can do this if you have begun to make contact with your 12 meditations a day. This is going to happen. But it's available only as you open yourself to receive it, to abide with it, and for no purpose. Even when you're called for help, you commune with it for no purpose. We have entered meditation for the purpose of communion with the Holy One, so that the Christ may find outlet through us. And that's the only reason. Do you see how in this moment, neither you nor I have any personal work to do about this? Well, I just can't tell you how wonderful that is when you leave the realm of the intellect and knowing all this truth and repeating all this truth. When you leave that room where you don't have to do that, that realm where you don't have to do that anymore, you simply rest back in the realization that you don't have to work that hard. There's an invisible flesh, a spirit, a presence, a Christ, that which God ordained and sustained and maintains. And it flows through and does its own work. And it's wonderful. Then we really know what grace is. Then we really know what Christmas is. There is a complete sense of peace and quiet in which we are perfectly willing to let it find outlet into the world to be about the Father's business. It is the Christ that is about the Father's business. It is this Christ that is performing the functions of God on earth. The place whereon thou standest is holy ground. It becomes Jerusalem, the holy city, wherever we attain the Prince of Peace, the Son of God, the Holy One of Israel. it becomes holy ground wherever we may be, where the Christ lifts and fills our consciousness and finds outlet to all of the world. All right, so we know what we're doing and we know why we're doing it. The only thing I would add is what I wrote at the end of this chapter. The world is new when Christ has entered in your consciousness. Behold, I shall make all things new. And now let me tell you another dream I had. I had a dream that I was standing in a temple, and there was the Christ next to me. And I looked down, and I had dissolved down to my knees, just from the knees down. Two little parts of legs were standing there, and I was amazed, of course. And I looked over, and there I was over there with a brand new body. And what struck me as strange is, hey, it looks exactly like the other one I had, except it's all new and shiny. And so, behold, I shall make all things new. You see, we're not going to have a different body. No, that's a religious nonsense. We're going to have the same body made new. How? By making this contact and having consciousness form itself, appear as form, rather than the mind and its appearing as forms. We are consciously deciding to step out of the second chapter of Genesis, in which the mind has formed all these monstrous creations, creations that can die, age, get sick, be destroyed. We're going to consciously move across into the first chapter of Genesis, where we witness, we're beholders, as consciousness forms itself. Beautiful forms, wondrous forms. And the body will be one of those forms. Only it will be not made by hands. It will be the Word manifested as invisible flesh appearing as body. And the same thing will happen with your material sense of supply. You will leave the second chapter where you have to earn your living by the sweat of your brow, and you will stand in the first chapter of Genesis, in which consciousness forms itself. Every need is fulfilled instantly. And we're leaving the sense of companionship found in the second chapter of Genesis, where we can be betrayed and murdered. We can fight for a living. We're moving back into the first chapter of Genesis, where consciousness forms itself as your companionship, which is a companion that's ever with you. Millions of faces, same companion. We're putting off the second chapter of Genesis and putting on the first chapter of Genesis. And I was told specifically, the first chapter of Genesis came first. In other words, it's already a finished creation. We become aware of it by degrees. It seems as if consciousness is forming a new body. It's not. Consciousness and its creation is already done. We become aware of its formations as we step out in our meditations out of the mind and its formations. However, we have to use this language that we're using in this chapter, which is that we go within, make the contact, and invisible flesh flows out and forms itself. That's the way it experiences. That's the way it feels. Okay, so this chapter called The Christ on Earth, now you understand, means consciousness formed, rather than mind-formed. And it all starts with the little contact that we make within. then we discover we don't have to direct it or tell it or plead with it or anything. We don't have to work that hard. We simply come again and again within, rest there, and behold, I shall make all things new.